Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 5th day of December. Tick, tick, tick. Anno Domini 2020. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Apple's share of the global smartphone market contracted in the third quarter of 2020 as part of a wider slowdown blamed on coronavirus worries, dropping the iPhone into fourth place. According to new estimates from research firm Gartner, Apple shipped 40.6 million iPhones during the quarter ending in September to capture an 11.1% market share. Year-over-year growth dipped 0.6%. pushing the company from third place to fourth. First place Samsung was one of two firms to record growth in the third quarter, with sales topping 80.8 million units, up 2.2% from the same time last year. The performance was good enough to make 22% of the market, nearly double Apple's iPhone shipments. Despite a massive 21.3% year-over-year contraction, Huawei held on to the second spot. They got almost a quarter fewer sales, and they're still in second place. Huawei held on to the second. Well, they sell. China is big on Huawei. Held on to the second spot with a 14.1% market share. Xiaomi was the quarter's biggest mover, jumping 34.9%. They're the ones who unseated Apple for the first time, so they're now in third place. Rounding out the top five is Oppo, with an 8.2% market share, which is down 2.3%. If you've been listening to the numbers, you'll know that overall the global smartphones sales market declined 5.7% year-over-year as consumer spending stalled due to the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. The situation is improving, however, as economies slowly churn back to life following government-mandated lockdowns. Apple was particularly hard hit during the third quarter. They typically debut new iPhone models at the end of September, a refresh cycle that buoys sales figures moving into the lucrative holiday quarter. This year, however, development and production ramp of iPhone 12 series devices was delayed as the virus forced Chinese partner suppliers to slow or suspend operations. They ultimately launched their new lineup in mid-October. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is new phone for Christmas, and your choices are just got one, planning on it, thinking about it, not this year, my princess desk phone works just fine, and of course, others. So far, we've got about 28 votes, and not this year is in the lead, followed by, of course, my princess desk phone works just fine, and the reason that's why I put it in there, because I know you people. Now, look,
I still have a Mickey Mouse phone.
So do I, but it's not my. Never mind. I actually still have a Candlestick phone.
Ooh.
I loved that phone. It sat next to my computer for years. Now we don't have a landline anymore, so it's not particularly useful at the moment. Although I suppose I could plug it into a VoIP phone.
There are Bluetooth to cellular adapters, because I looked into one when we got rid of our landlines. It's nice to have phones in all rooms in the house.
Yeah.
And so I found these Bluetooth to cellular adapters where you pair it to your cell phone, and it's got a POTS jack on it. So you plug it in to where your landline used to plug in, and all the extensions in your house work again using your cell phone number.
Well, that is interesting. All right. Anyway, if you said other, if you have more to say, and I know you will, head on over to Soundbites, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, and you will see the forum. Second forum down is under the forums. The second forum down is poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 5DEC20, new phone for Christmas, question mark. And, of course, you can join us here. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Or, of course, you can text us at our text line, 585-205-8887. But remember, if you do text us, please, please give us enough information to help you. Because it's, you know, we often, when people call in, we have follow-up questions. So if you don't give us enough information, we really cannot at all answer your question. But yeah, the phone market is down in general. It's too bad. I know a lot of companies plan on, you know, particularly Apple, really not a computer company anymore. Now, pretty much a phone and tablet company.
It's a pocket computer.
It's a pocket computer, but it's a phone. And if that's down, then Apple is down as well. They're the ones who are hardest hit, having actually dropped from 3 to 4. Q3 has been rough for everybody. Clearly.
And a lot of times in Q3, the people that know about such things know there's a new phone coming in Q4. So
right.
Wait for it.
Well, that's the Osborne effect.
Yeah.
Right. People stop. The minute you announce the new thing, people stop buying the old thing. And in Apple's case, because every year they come out with a new phone, people know that that's going to happen.
It's become too predictable.
Right, right, right. So, I get it. It's you know, if you're going to get the new phone, wait for the new phone. The same thing with the computers. Apple sales drop off just before, what would traditionally be the new announcement. You know, every time Apple says they're having their one more thing event or whatever they're going to call it next year, sales drop off a little.
Yep.
As people wait for the new thing.
Although I am surprised by the number of people that come in and want to buy a new computer without knowing that there's an announcement next week and those new computers will be coming out.
Yeah.
So not everyone is as tight to the news as we are.
Well, exactly, exactly. Yeah. But what Apple really counts on, of course, are those initial buyers, the real fanboys who got to have the new thing immediately, and they're the ones who are doing the waiting.
They usually call that out in their earnings calls about how many first-time Apple buyers. And it still surprises me how many first-time Apple buyers there are.
Yeah.
But I wonder if they count returning Apple buyers. I used to have an Apple, then I got to Android, now I'm going back to Apple.
Yeah, right, right, right.
Yeah, because that's not technically first-time, it's a returning customer in their point of view.
Right. Or are they weaseling it by saying it's the first time they bought an iPhone 12?
Yeah.
Everybody's a first-time buyer. Yeah. Hey!
There was a cable company in town that was like that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
the special deal they gave was only for first-time or only for new customers.
Right.
If you had switched and come back, you weren't eligible because you weren't a new customer. You were a returning customer.
Right.
And so all their advertisements for these great deals are only for new customers. And they don't have any new customers.
Yeah, right. Exactly. at any rate, that's what's going on with the phone. So we'd love to hear from you about, if you are buying a new phone, what are you buying? If you're not buying a new phone, why not? Give us a call. Like I said, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at 585-205-8887. Texting has become so much bigger than any of the phone companies ever thought it would.
Yeah, it was just leftover capacity. Hey, we can charge 25 cents a letter for that.
Yeah, right. And then, well, but that's, you know, that's why for so many places, texting was free.
Yep.
Right? Who was using it? Nobody. You know, why would you text somebody when you could call them? And as it turns out, everybody texts.
Yeah.
Everybody texts.
I much prefer to text than to actually talk to someone.
Yeah, well, I don't talk to anybody.
One of my biggest annoyances is at work is we call someone, leave a message. Either, you know, your computer's done, ready to pick up. That's the most common message.
Sure.
Sometimes it's, you know, we need this or that. And they'll call back and say, you just called me.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you listen to them? Oh, I didn't listen to the message.
Right.
What was the message? Your computer's done. Oh, can I come pick it up? No, you can't.
No. We just wanted to let you know it's done and we're going to put it in the wall and leave it there for the next 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Someday we'll sell the building. Somebody will knock down that wall and find your computer.
Yeah.
Bricked up in it. Thank you for calling. Goodbye.
Yeah. I saw a cute thing on the internet. Some guy was redoing a wall in the house or something, and they got one of those skeletons at like the Halloween store and put it in the wall.
Oh, nice.
And so then 20 years later, when the next owner is redoing the wall, they're going to find a skeleton.
I've seen the same thing where people are building a deck.
A deck,
they bury it under the deck. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see what they make of that.
Yep.
But the phone thing, to get back to the phone thing, fewer people are buying new phones. And a lot of that has to do with the pandemic. God knows what's going to happen and how quickly we'll get back to normal and people are hoarding their money.
Mm-hmm.
But also they're spending it. They're finding that they can do it differently. For example, if you've got an iPad or any kind of tablet, or you're sitting at home anyway, you're on your computer, most people would rather look at a bigger screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not going to bother buying a new phone. People of my daughter's age. Yeah, she spends a lot of time on her phone, but she also spends a great deal of time on her little handheld gaming things.
Yep.
So that and she can do all kinds of stuff from those, and 80% of the people that she chats with are on those things too.
Yep.
And everybody's home. So, you know, that's a whole situation there. There's not, currently at least, there's not a burning need for most people to get a new phone.
But you still want one.
You want one, yes, but you don't have a burning need, and suddenly people are being slightly more responsible.
Yeah. Well, that's why we've been seeing a lot more of the payment plans that you can get now instead of paying full price for the phone.
Right.
You pay a payment plan. And a lot of times you can get the brand new phone, and with the trade-in of your old phone, your payments don't go up.
Right.
So I get the brand new phone, and I keep paying what I have been paying.
Right.
Well, I'll do that.
Yes, yeah. But you keep paying it forever.
Forever, yeah.
That's a whole other thing.
Well, because that's what we're used to. In the early days when you had a contract, say that 2-year contract, when the contract expired, your payments should have gone down.
Theoretically.
They never did because the phone companies assumed that you were going to get a new phone.
Right.
And so you kept paying for the contract you already paid off.
Right.
And that didn't matter when you did go to get your new phone.
Right.
So nowadays that does work. If you pay off your 2-year plan, your payments will go down to just the service.
But if you do the math, and you can afford to pay it off to buy it outright,
mm-hmm.
you save a lot of money.
Well, Apple is
a lot of money.
Apple's one of the few companies that doesn't charge interest on their payment plans.
Well, that is nice.
And if you put it on your Apple Pay card, you get 3% back.
Oh, that's nice.
So they charge you negative 3% on your payment plans.
That is nice. That is not bad at all. Okay, I can go with that. I get that.
I don't know if Samsung does that with their own. Well, they have Samsung Pay, but they don't have a credit card yet.
Right. Right.
Although I wouldn't put it past them issuing one, too. Seeing Apple's making all that money in those credit cards.
I'm sure they are. And of course, you can use Apple Pay or you can use Google Pay or you can use Samsung Pay to buy things. And of course, that's actually much more secure than using your credit card or whatever.
Because they send a unique credit card number on every transaction.
Right.
So if that vendor gets compromised, that one credit card number doesn't exist anymore.
Right. I almost never used my Google Pay,
mm-hmm.
but now I'm using it all the time.
Yeah.
I can use it off my watch. I can use it off my phone. I can, you know, whatever I want to do.
I still get clerks that go look at me weird when I hold my watch up to the terminal.
Is it weird or is it envy?
Yeah.
You hope it's envy. It's probably weird.
Yep.
No, we have, for those of you who are not using something like Apple Pay or Google Pay or even Samsung Pay. I don't know that Samsung Pay does it, but Apple and Google both always send a unique number so that your credit card will not be compromised. And as somebody who had to tear up his card and get a new one because it got stolen. Trust me when I tell you it's a whole lot of pain for not really much gain.
Yeah.
Using your pay, your Google Pay or your Apple Pay or your Samsung Pay is a much, much better deal. And it keeps you much more secure and much safer. And there's nothing wrong with that. So think about it if you're not doing it. And like I said, it's just a matter of, you know, you tap your phone. On mine, it won't even work without my fingerprint.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even if you steal my phone, you can't buy anything with it.
You have to steal your finger, too.
You have to steal my finger, too.
And keep it warm, because it's not just the fingerprint. It's
right,
the,
you know. right. So, if you have, you know what they say, cold hands, poor circulation. But is that something like that?
Something like that.
Anyway, so if you are worried about the security of your credit card.
Especially if you're online shopping.
I use PayPal mainly because PayPal is just a matter of one click and I'm in. Right? I mean, any place that takes PayPal, I'm there.
Yep.
I'm there.
Although I ran into a weird issue with PayPal. I bought something from the UK.
Oh, yeah.
Intentionally.
Sure. Oh, okay.
The other day I bought something, a birthday present from Matthew, and it came from Ceylon.
Oh, nice.
I didn't know that.
Tea. You bought him tea.
Yeah. It just said 2-week delivery. Okay, no problem.
Yeah, right.
It was a month, and so now it's a Christmas present.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, I bought something from the UK, and I put it on PayPal because I was worried about international, you know, currency conversions and potential fraud. PayPal charged me an international fee.
Interesting.
And because I have PayPal tied to my bank account, my bank charged me an international fee. Well, that was the point of using PayPal.
Right. Interesting. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is James from Rochester, New York. Hi, James. What's up?
Oh, hi. On my Twitter, scrolling through the videos, I can't get any sound on them. And everything else on my laptop is fine with the sound. This just happened after I did a scan. Did I change something?
You may have muted the sound in Twitter rather than on the computer.
Okay, that's my problem. Where do I find this unmute button in Twitter?
Usually it's in the video somewhere.
Usually in the lower right corner. And you may not see it if it's... Okay, when you look at a video... you'll see across the bottom there's, you know, the standard little line that tells you how far you've gone and the stop and the start and all that stuff. Over on the far right is a speaker.
Yes.
And often just off screen is the slider to make it louder or softer. And you may have muted it.
Sometimes it's next to the full screen icon.
I find the slider on all of them, but the slider is up, but there's no sound.
There may be another icon next to it for actually mute rather than just volume control.
Are you on your phone or are you on your...
On my laptop.
What operating system are you running?
Windows 7.
Okay, and you're on the Twitter page?
The Twitter website or client?
Well, like my Twitter, where all the people that I follow.
Right. But are you did you open the web page? Are you in a Twitter client like Twitterific or one of the other ones?
No, the Twitter web page.
Okay.
Yeah, and like I'm looking at it right now, and the slider is all the way up. But it always used to work until last week when I did a Kaspersky scan and a CCleaner. So I'm wondering if that had anything to do with it.
And what browser are you using? Chrome. Okay. Chrome.
I've been looking all over. This is a real tough one.
Yeah, it is a tough one. The videos play, but you can't hear anything.
Yes,
If you place
on the Twitter,
if you go to like YouTube or whatever.
Everything else is fine.
Okay, so it is specifically Twitter.
It is specifically Twitter, and all my settings are okay. And it just disappeared when I did a Seek Cleaner scan.
No, I heard that, yeah.
The question is, how does this get put undone or so I can get the volume again?
Right. That's a very good question.
I wrote to Twitter, but I haven't heard back from them. Do they answer these two times I wrote?
Yeah, they often enough. Often enough, you will find that it's a Twitter issue, but I don't know of anybody else having that problem right now.
Yeah, no, this is very strange.
Yeah, because I'm saying it's happened several times over the years where Twitter just.
Oh.
It has no sound, and they eventually fix it. But I don't think that's...
And I'm trying to log into my Twitter account, but it's not accepting my password, so I haven't...
Well, that's an issue.
Yeah, all right.
Let me log into mine, see if
Go ahead.
See if I can play a sound thing. Give me a second here.
No, that's an ad.
Yeah, all right, here's...
Do the sound in the ads play?
No. Nothing on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm not even... I can't even load a video. I can log into Twitter, but I can't load a video.
That might be the school proxy server, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you discover, and I know you can't figure this out probably right now, but if you I listen to the show. If you discover an answer, I'll be listening.
All right, perfect. Thanks. Sorry.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Yeah. Somewhere there's a...
Yeah, I can't load any Twitter videos here. That's very weird. There's a lot of ways to fix it on a phone. But everything else in Chrome works. Oh, I wonder if it's in the privacy settings.
Oh, ad blocker. He could have an ad blocker on his website, blocking it because it thinks it's an ad.
Right. Well, it plays, it just doesn't play sound.
Yeah.
So that it's unlikely that it's that.
Chrome can mute specific tabs, can't it? Rather than all tabs?
Yes, it can. First, under Chrome settings, in privacy and security... there's a sound section. Make sure that first allow sites to play sound. Well, let me actually look at it instead of pretending I can remember it.
All right, I've got one playing, and I don't have a mute. Well, I'm on the Twitter app.
Yeah,
the app remembered my password, but my login isn't accepting what I thought the password was.
Right
on the website.
Sound. If you do a search for sound under site settings, look to see if you have blocked any sites from doing sound, particularly under if you go into site settings. And then scroll down under additional content settings. You have sound, which says allow sites to play sound. And you might have muted some of them. So check that to see if you've, not you necessarily, but your antivirus muted the sound somehow. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 30 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We've had a couple of text messages. Mike from Victor wanted to know what was the automated backup solution that works in the cloud that I was talking about a couple of weeks ago. And That's a program called PCloud. You can read more about it at my website.
Bless you.
Thank you. Beg your pardon, everyone. AskNick.com/backup.php. And you can see a whole bunch of programs that allow you to do backup. The very first thing that I talk about is PCloud. If you use that link, it's my affiliate link. I get a few bucks, and that's, well, a few pennies.
I was going to say, you're not that rich.
not that rich.
Yeah, no.
But
pennies is probably even stretcher.
Yeah, every penny helps. So I would very much appreciate it if you'd use that link. Again, that's asknick.com/backup.php. But the three things I like about it are listed on that page. It's set and forget. Once you set it up, which is an easy thing to do, but once you set it up, you're done. It just remembers it forever and does it forever. You buy it and forget it. It is a lifetime subscription. You only pay for it once. You can get a half a terabyte or 2 terabytes or whatever. And it's ubiquitous. It works on Windows, Mac, and Linux. Yep. So you can really do a lot with it.
And even if you have something automatic, make sure it's still happening. We have a lot of people bring their computers in. You know, the hard drive is dead, and they have their backup drive right there. Well, your last backup was 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, I had it plugged in. Well, you've been ignoring the messages that it hasn't been working.
I've had PCloud for a couple of years now, and I still, every time I save some, I've set it automatically so that all my documents, all my pictures, and a couple other folders get automatically backed up to the cloud. And so every time I save a picture or a document, I take a look at that little cloud icon in the corner to see if the ring shows up.
It's updating.
It tells me it's updating. I still do that. It still does. And, of course, you can go look at it either online or through the little app or at least on Linux. You can even mount the entire cloud drive as a regular drive. I don't know if that happens on Windows or the Mac. I'm sure it does.
It's probably WebDAV, isn't it?
That's true. I think it is. And so you just load it up, and then I can go look and see that everything that I have uploaded is indeed there, mere moments after I've saved it. So it's great. Some sort of backup that is off-site, some sort of cloud accessible backup is a really, in addition to your, don't stop doing your other backups. Let me reiterate that. Don't stop doing your other backups. Because, as I say in large white letters on a red background on that page, you do not have enough backups. You simply don't. I don't care how many you have. You don't have enough. I spent 25, almost 30 years, in fact, as a systems administrator. I have to upgrade this now. Yeah. And that's the single most important lesson. You do not have enough backups.
Let's see. Nobody on the phone. We do have one more question here.
Okay. But anyway, let me just finish. PCloud is a very, very good solution. And it is among the least expensive and easiest to make work. So that's my suggestion. But again, there are others, so don't get excited.
I apologize. I didn't mean to interrupt. I got a few things going on here.
Yep.
Confusion and all that. So I was only half listening to what you guys were talking about. But we did have another text come in, and it says, PC not phone question. For archive backup, I use a CD or a DVD to move my old pictures, et cetera, off the hard drive. I read advice online that CDs and DVDs are considerably volatile and therefore not good for backup. In compromise, how viable is my external hard drive? What's your opinion? My slow upload prevents a cloud backup. Thanks.
Yeah. That is one issue with any cloud backup. The first time you do it, it takes forever.
Yeah,
there used to be a couple of companies where you could send them a backup drive, and then they would put it on the cloud in one shot.
Well, that would be, again, where I would suggest that, you know, if you've got slow upload speed, all right, again, at night, just before you go to bed, select a bunch of files that need to go back up, folders.
Yep.
let them start uploading while you're at bed, you know, going to bed.
Yeah, leave the machine on.
Leave the machine on. Turn the monitor off.
Even with green light, it took me a day or two to upload everything,
yeah,
and that's
did.
Fine.
Yeah.
But at any rate, so here's the deal on this. Any storage medium, Apple, okay, let's start with Google. Google and Apple has done the same thing, and so has Microsoft, but Google publishes their data. Google has...
Backblaze was another one that did, and that matches what Google found.
Right. Right, Backblaze did the same thing. Google has billions of hard drives and billions of both spinning hard drives and SSDs. And they have discovered that every drive has a mean time between failure of 5 years, no matter who makes the drive, what kind it is, anything. So... The mean time between failure means some drives last 10 years and some drives die out of the box. But the average drive lasts 5 years before it starts to have issues. So that's whether it's a hard drive or anything. So if you have a hard drive, expect to get 5 years out of it before you need to replace that drive. And, you know, some die sooner, some die later. It's a crapshoot. You pays your money and you takes your chance.
And
go ahead.
I was saying, and the connection methods change. You know, if you have a parallel hard drive from 20 years ago that has your backup on it, what are you going to plug that into now?
Yeah, exactly. And if you have a DVD player still and yeah. reader, DVDs are good. Do not store them edge on.
The data drips off.
The data drips off. I hate you in so many ways. Equally, it warps the disk.
Yeah. The bigger issue is that the physical disks have gotten so cheap that the coating tends to flake off
right.
after a few years, especially of thermal changes. You know, we've had people that left disks in their car overnight and it was destroyed the next
right.
morning.
Right.
You can buy archival disks that are specially designed to be archived. Kodak used to make it. Now it's Kodak Media Products that apparently has no relation to Kodak anymore.
Right.
But their discs are rated for 100 years, and they're like $10 a disc. They're pretty expensive.
Right.
But they are rated for archiving.
But that's only 10 cents a year, so
yeah.
Really, you're ahead of the game.
Yeah. But even DVDs are only 4 gigs.
Right.
Now, it would take thousands of DVDs to back up all my stuff.
Right. So in the long run, one of the nice things about online storage, depending on whose online storage you use, yes. But one of the nice things about online storage is that it's fairly regularly refreshed. The company itself yeah. adds new hard drives, moves stuff to new hard drives, does all of that as part of their job, and you don't have to worry about it. The likelihood that data you saved online will be available 20 years from now is actually higher than if you put it on a DVD and stuck it on a shelf.
Yeah. The bigger question has become, is that company going to still be around? And is
right.
are they still offering storage space? All the people that put their photos on photo sharing sites that don't exist anymore.
Right.
Or that change their service terms from
right.
unlimited to 100 megs.
Like Google.
Yeah.
But that's why yeah. you don't have only right. one place you back yeah. stuff up. So
even companies like Google and Microsoft and Apple that are probably still going to be here in 20 years.
Easily.
You still want to have more than one place.
Right. I have backups on Google Drive. I have backups on a hosting company that I buy unlimited storage from, and I'm testing that. and I have pCloud and a couple of other places. So, you know, I've got multiple devices out on the web, including my local storage. I've got multiple local storage things, but I've also got multiple devices out on the web where I back stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having spent a vast portion of my life as a systems administrator, I still, every night when I go to bed, in the back of my head, I hear tick, tick, tick.
Yep.
Yeah. Something's going to blow up sometime.
It's not if, it's just when.
It's exactly right. So I didn't get a name off of that texter, but external storage of any sort, if it's physical media, 5 years, if it's online storage, have more than one, but yeah. the online storage is more likely to be viable.
Sound like
Again, assuming you're right, assuming the company is still in business, is more likely to be viable 10 years from now than some medium that you've got sitting on a shelf.
Tape used to be big.
Tape used to be big. I have a friend who still has tapes, and the problem is not the tapes, it's the drive.
The drive, we've got a company that has like a 10. So the biggest tapes, what were they, DLO, were only 100 megs. No, right. 100 gigs, so 10 of them to make a terabyte. Well, you know, the average desktop computer has a terabyte storage.
Now it does,
Yeah, and so they were expensive. It took a lot to swap those tapes out all the time. And so tape just isn't viable anymore either. It's hard drive. Hard drives are about the only thing really viable to back up hard drives to.
That's exactly right. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Rich, what's up?
Hi, guys. I've got an answer maybe for your first caller there.
Oh, good.
Right where you guys were saying the slider for the volume control inside the video is a speaker.
Right.
And sometimes that speaker gets muted.
Yep. Yep. And that's what we're...
If there's a line through it, then it's muted. If you click on it, it will unmute it.
Right. Even if you have the volume control all the way up, if mute overrides the volume level.
Right. Thank you. That's excellent. Thanks. He did write back and say that he solved the problem. So thank you to all of you who texted and everything else. So thanks. Thanks, Rich.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great one. Happy holidays.
Same to you. Have fun. That's what this season is about. Love and joy and peace and tranquility and fun. And what sometimes
and
we forget
your kids
about
are
the
grown.
Fun. And what?
Your kids are grown.
And my kids are grown.
And no grandkids yet.
No grandkids yet.
I have a wife. No.
Yeah, right.
It's almost my son and I almost don't care, but we got to keep mom happy.
Yeah, right. This is another one of those years where I've got, I don't know, 200-300 ideas for my daughter.
Yep.
No flipping idea what I'm going to get my wife. And I've been thinking about it for 2 months.
Yep.
Because I know you got to order like last
night. Well, I've been trying to listen through the year.
Yeah.
When she says I need that, I'll write it down.
Both
her and I have really expensive tastes, though. That's the problem.
Right.
But, I don't mind the clothes, people, you know. I could use a new pair of jeans, a couple new shirts. That'd be fine, too.
Yep. The problem I have is I do listen to what my wife wants, but what I usually hear is, hey, I just bought myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. All right.
Before we go to the phone, we have one more. Somebody just texted in. I found that Twitter sound button and Google address bar at top. A little button next to the star icon to the bookmark a page. I did never see this before. Thanks. It's appreciated. After I clicked, it allowed the sounds. Thanks, James.
Thanks, James. Yeah. Okay.
The browsers, Safari, Chrome, Firefox, have started to mute individual tabs if they're playing audio to stop those ads from playing in a tab you don't know anymore.
Right.
So they put that little speaker icon in the tab header or in the browser window
header. Right, and it's a good thing, but you got to know it's there.
Yeah.
Google's been doing that for a while, but they didn't make it automated mute.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Matt from Webster, New York. What's up, Matt?
I've been seeing a lot of ads about coronavirus and government conspiracies. Do you think that the people and the founders of Facebook, like Mark Zuckerberg or the guy from Twitter, are really trying to screw us up? And I have to know your answer.
No. But guys...
Tell you what, no. We're not going to take a position on that. So, if you got a computer question, throw it out there.
Right.
All right. My computer question is, when my USB flash drive breaks, how would I fix it?
You don't. Because what happens there is, and I've warned folks for a long time right now, is that on flash drives, you run the trouble of when you plug it in, there is like only four little fingers that are soldered on to that connector, the USB connector itself, you know, where you see that white part, that if you go all the way back in, is there's only four little fingers, and that's soldered, surface soldered, onto a circuit board. So when that breaks off, depending on how it was pulled off, sometimes it'll pull the pads and everything else off the circuit board, making it unusable.
And also that happens inside your computer.
Yep.
The connector that you plug into on the computer, whether it's a desktop or a laptop or even on your phone, is exactly that same sort of surface mounted thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if you're a little too uncareful, you're going to have a problem. So the big thing with flash drives, just like with any other medium, have multiple backups. If one flash drive dies, throw it away and use another one with the same data on it.
Yep.
That's just, there's no way
around that. They're so cheap nowadays. And the problem is we get in the habit of they're in the side of the machine. We forget they're there. And we go quick, grab the machine to go off to do something. And that gets hit on something and snaps off.
One of the things that I really like about a lot of the newer flash drives is they're getting to be so physically small, the chance of breaking them off are lower. But then the chance that you forget it's in there is higher.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like on the power cords. So many folks say, you know, well, the power cord is loose.
Yep.
And it's like, well, you know, and when you tell them what it'll cost to replace that, they go, well, it's right there on the top.
Yep.
I go, no, you got to take the whole laptop apart, flip it upside down, and unsolder it. And you're talking about hours. Not just a few minutes, hours of work.
And the number of people who will unsolder a surface mount are fewer and fewer.
Yep. So, that answer your question?
Yeah, that's a good one. I hope you guys have a Merry Christmas.
You
too.
That's all
I want to say. Yep. I carry around a 32-gig flash drive that's tiny. I mean, tiny.
Yeah.
It's that big.
We had a customer bring their computer in the other day, and it had an SD card reader in it, like a lot of them do. Someone had made several companies have made an SD card that would flush mount. Because SD cards will, you push them in and they eject. And so it was an extra storage in the side of their computer that didn't stick out any, and you didn't have to carry around a hard drive for it.
Right. Yeah. This one, my Chromebook has one the SD card, the micro SD card sticks out maybe a millimeter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, that's okay.
Yep.
But yeah, you want to be very careful. Everything that you can plug into, well, any computer these days, but particularly a laptop or a phone, anything that you can plug into them, those, let's face it, every company is cheaping out. I don't care, even Apple, they're all cheaping out. So those solder joints get thinner and thinner, and you know they measure them now to make sure that they're just thick enough.
If it's a penny cheaper and you do a million of them a day, that's a lot of money.
Right? No, it's exactly right. I get why they're doing it, but the point is, what that means is you have to be more careful.
Yeah.
The days when you could rip one of those things out and wander off, those days are pretty much gone.
That's why I wish more laptop makers had followed the Macs and having that magnetic.
Well, the Apple patented MagSafe.
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 I wish that.
And they're charging so much money, nobody went with
it. And they don't use it anymore, which is annoying.
And I wish that could be readopted.
Well, there are companies that make magnetic adapters for current cables. So Apple went to a standard USB Type-C connector on their newest computers that isn't MagSafe. So you can get one of the third-party aftermarkets to turn it into a MagSafe.
I got one. I got 10 of them off Amazon for, I don't know, $12 or whatever the number was. And they're great.
Yep.
I mean, they're great. I no longer worry about my phone. I've got one for my car, so when I plug it in the car, it just... And I don't even have to look anymore. It's just like, it's connected. There's a stocking stuffer idea for every single one of you. The MagSafe
in Type-C and also Lightning for older iPhones.
Type-C, Lightning, Micro B.
The wonderful thing about standards is there's so many of them to choose from.
That's right. And particularly for USB, It's U.S. everything is what it actually is. So, yeah, but my thought, our thought in general is that if you can find something like that, what a great last-minute stocking stuffer. Yep. And there are a number of companies doing it if you just do a USB magnetic connector on any one of the sales sites.
You talk about, you know, Christmas ideas.
Yeah.
I happen to see an ad, and I'm sure you guys have seen it too, for that Glowforge.
Oh, yeah, the laser cutter.
Did you see the price on the starter unit?
Well, that is so far down from what it used to be
to
get a laser cutter.
$2,500.
That's cheap.
Yeah.
It
used to have a couple more commas in it.
Yeah. And even when it came down from that, there was still more than one digit to the left of that comma.
Yeah.
Now there's just one and it's a two.
Yeah. $2,500.
My wife happened to, you know, because it was on TV. She goes, that'd probably be a cool thing for you. You know, you'd have fun with. I go, no. She goes, why?
You can get
$250 off right now.
What?
$250 off right now on the Glowforge website.
That's not bad. That's
well, it's just like I was also looking
that's the name brand. Yeah.
For a different chair, you know, computer chair.
Yeah.
And I was looking at those X chairs.
Yeah, I know.
It's like
ridiculous.
$600.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, and they're $100 off.
You can get, like now you can get 3D printers for $150. They're not great 3D printers, but they're 3D printers and they work. I have one. I love it. Similarly, you can get attachments, heads for a 3D printer, which is essentially exactly the same thing as a laser cutter. And you get a laser head that you replace the hot end of the 3D printer with a laser head, and you have a multi-use product.
And if you lower the power of the laser, it becomes an etcher instead of a cutter.
That's exactly right. So you can do that as well.
Yeah. Wow.
So there's lots of things you can do for less than $2,500.
Okay.
All right, that music tells us we're at the end of our first hour of this show, but don't go away. There's a whole nother hour of Dave Enright, way too much more Steve Ray, and not nearly enough Nick Francesco. Coming your way after this short break, we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. So take a quick bio break and then come on back. And we'll do a whole nother hour of this nonsense. And you can give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415, or text us at 585-205-8887. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. We've had a few texts. Let's do those before we get to the phone.
Yep.
So hang on, Fred. We'll get to you, I promise. So the first text, do hard drives go bad on the shelf? Well, yes and no.
Yep.
Here's the deal with that. That mean time between failure of 5 years that I quoted earlier, that's for use. That's you being used. I mean, obviously, Apple and Google and Microsoft and whatever that other company was use their machines, use their hard drives constantly. So that's 5 years of use.
Mm-hmm.
So putting it on the shelf, don't count that time, except that hard drives store data magnetically and magnetism fades over time.
And the lubricating fluids on the spindle that spins the drive.
Yep.
Will harden and dry up over time.
Remember the Stiction problem years ago where you had to hit it really hard?
I kept a little rubber hammer.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
To do that. So do hard drives go bad on the shelf? Not the way you're thinking, but yes. They don't necessarily lose. And the same with SD cards. They don't flip bits or that sort of nonsense, but the magnetism fades over time, and that's less of a problem, obviously, with SD cards,
especially as dense as hard drives are getting. It used to be a hard drive would have several platters. You want to make it twice as the capacity, you put a second platter in there. But then they got thicker and thicker and thicker. Nowadays, I don't think hard drives have more than one platter in them because they're so thin.
Yeah.
And they're double-sided.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the possibility of a leak from one side to the other.
Higher capacity means cramming the bits closer together. And the bits are pieces of rust, little iron filings.
Right.
Are they north-south or are they south-north?
Right. And so, yes, Texter, hard drives can go bad on the shelf. So, again, if you've got a drive that's been sitting around for 10 years, probably not as good as it used to be.
Like we've said, though, it's an electronic device.
Right. And we had another text that said mean time between failure for a certain brand was 10,000 hours. And yes, like we said, that's 5 years of use, not 5 years of existence.
Right.
So, yes. We had another text questioning where's last week's podcast. Well, we were not on the air last week. So you may have noticed that the show was a repeat. And we were not on. So there was no specific podcast last week. Now we can go to Fred from Rochester. Hi, Fred. Thank you for being patient.
Yeah, it was me last week. I didn't realize that you were repeating until after I had sent the text. And this is an encore. So, yeah, that was my mistake. I didn't get you turned on early enough to find out it was a repeat.
Right. They only announced it at the beginning of the show. I get it.
And every time you said call someone in, I wonder if the phone rang.
Yeah.
Probably. Imagine it did. You're talking about Christmas stuff, and my daughter has a Kindle that has no ports, but it does have Bluetooth. Is there a hard drive that I can Bluetooth connect?
No.
I've seen Wi-Fi hard drives.
Yeah, no, ish. There are a couple of things. Is this in order to take things off the Kindle? Or
yeah, to back it up.
Yeah. You can connect to your Kindle from your computer and back things up that way.
Using the charging port, which is probably USB.
No, using Bluetooth. If your computer
Oh, yeah, Bluetooth file transfer,
Bluetooth. Yeah. You can transfer data. It's not terribly fast, but it works. So the choice between not doing it and doing it slow is, you know, yours to make. But you can transfer files over Bluetooth by connecting the two devices. You can also put them, I believe you can store them in, I don't use my Kindle much.
Amazon Cloud.
But you can store them in Amazon's cloud.
You get some free storage and you can pay for more.
Right. So you can upload a bunch of stuff to the cloud, download it on your computer, wipe it out of the cloud, et cetera, et cetera. But those are the two easiest ways to move data between a Kindle and a laptop. And then once it's on the laptop, you can do whatever you want to do to back it up.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks.
Yep. Good luck. Yeah. Most of these things. And of course, if it's the whole idea behind a Kindle is to sell you books.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And those books are kept at Amazon.
Yeah.
So even if your Kindle is destroyed, you go buy a new Kindle.
You still
those books are still available in your account.
Yep.
So you log in with the same username and password, and all your books come back.
Now
will it remember, like if you were in the middle of a book where you left off?
Maybe.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sometimes
I have had that happen, and I have had that not happen.
Oh, okay.
So maybe.
Well, no. The reason I ask, I had just gotten my wife one of the books, Amazon book, and she's loving it. And matter of fact, because I'm a Prime member, they also, as part of that Prime package, gave me two free books, which I because I opened up the account for Amazon for both her and I.
Right.
So then that way she can just download whatever books she wants. So now she's got the problem. What books do I get? I go, sorry, I got you the device.
Yeah,
it's up to you. Don't.
Now you're on your own.
Yeah.
Good luck. Bye-bye.
Amazon is doing something that Google is stopping now, the free unlimited high-res photos.
Yeah.
Amazon Prime members, in addition to all the other Prime features, you get free unlimited full-res photo storage. and 5 gigs of video storage.
Right.
I don't think they have announced a change to that.
Yet.
After Google announced they're changing their free storage options. Right.
Now, will that mean, like, if we're doing with our Pixel phone standard, that doesn't affect us then?
It does not yet. Pixel phones still have free standard storage, unlimited standard storage.
Yeah.
So far.
That's what I thought.
Right. So if that's one of the things I like about pCloud is the fact that if I get a picture from, like, I have a friend who is digitizing all the his family photos, mm-hmm. and I'm in a bunch of them, and I want to see the family as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So he sends them to me. I don't put them in Google Drive, although Google Drive is so much more convenient for finding things and searching things and like that. But I put them now in pCloud since I've got, you know, a lot of storage left there.
I'm saying we should point out to people who might not be mathematically inclined that this 10,000 hour between failure, that sounds like a lot. It's 13 months.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not if it's continually running.
Yeah. And so if you have your backup drive plugged into your computer all the time,
you get
backing
about a
up
year.
All the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Meantime. Yeah. So like you said, some fell out of the box, some last 10 years.
Yep.
Just talking about searching and all that, my wife is big into Ancestry.
Sure.
Okay. So she started looking at my dad's mother.
Okay.
Searching her back. And she's finding all my grandfather's and grandmother's back into the colonial days and everything else.
Nice.
And she found, and still hasn't verified it yet, but evidently, like, my 8th or 9th great-great-great-grandmother was in Massachusetts and was evidently considered a witch.
Nice!
So she goes, do you know you had a witch in the family? I go, what?
I'm married to one, yeah.
No,
no. Not if he wants to sleep with both eyes closed.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and it's like, whoa.
That was another
one of those things I read about the Salem witch trials. There weren't really that many people killed.
Right, right. Very few, actually.
Compared to the hype that has lasted centuries.
Right. Yeah, that you were burned at the stake or dunked.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And drowned.
My ancestors, I've had several people say, I'd be happy to look up your ancestry for you. And I say, no, you really wouldn't, because you can't find anybody. Our original name was not Francesco. It got randomly changed at Ellis Island. So you look up the Francescos, you're not going to find a lot of them.
Yeah.
Not that I'm related to. But the actual family name goes, we all come from a very small town, outside a very small town, outside of Naples. So the only way you find anything about our family is you go there and you go to the church in the little town, outside the little town.
Well, that's the same problem we'd have with my my grandfather came through with his brother from Ellison Island, through Ellison Island from Canada.
Right.
Because my great-grandfather moved from Ireland, and I guess with a few other family members, and came into Canada at the time. He couldn't come into the U.S.
Right.
So to find anything further, we'd have to go over to Ireland and his county court and find out
My uncle did that. He hired a guy.
Oh, really?
And it turns out that we are distantly descended from Piero della Francesca, who was a painter in the, 13th, 14th, 15th century, who's the guy who, and they say invented, which is nonsense, but invented perspective.
I wish.
In painting. So, and Della Francesco means we're somehow related to royalty. I sincerely doubt I'm going to get a call that I'm suddenly the king of Italy, but.
Yeah. Well, I used to see all these commercials for your family crest.
Yeah.
Where they would scam people and I know people that have them. They'd scam you out of $50, $100 to make up a family crest for you.
Yep.
Because most of us are immigrants from Europe, and we're not going to go over there and check.
We have a family crest, not under Francesco, but we have a family crest. And I don't have a copy of it right now. I'll have to go.
Well, that's one thing. I'm so sad that my dad's not around, because he did go to Ireland and do some tracing, and he had all this information at the time. It's like, yeah, that's, you know, did you enjoy yourself and everything? But he had so much information, but he passed before Sandy could, you know, talk to him and pick his brain.
Sure.
Because he learned so much over there, and now it's sadly gone. And that's just like when we tell folks, you know, as far as backing up your photos and everything else, once it's gone, folks, it's gone. You can't recreate those photos and everything else that are, you know, treasured memories of your past and your loved ones that, like Nick has said for a long time, back up, back up. Oh, and do one more back up on top of that.
And the number of times people have yelled at me saying, well, computers shouldn't break.
Okay.
Okay, they shouldn't.
And light bulbs shouldn't burn out.
You should have had a backup, like we told you. And that's always...
And creating a backup is so simple these days. It is so stupidly simple. Yep. It just... I want to get angry. I mean, I always feel empathy for people who've lost stuff because they didn't back up. Yep. But on the other hand, it took me...
Didn't it?
When probably they 10 minutes.
Yeah, they didn't have the time, but yet now they got the time to be upset.
No, now you've got the time.
Yeah, we tell them how to do it. We sell them a drive to do it with. They bring back the sealed drive. Oh, good, I brought this backup drive. That'll help, right? It's still sealed in the box. You never actually ran the backup.
Right. And like I said, when I set up P Drive, yes, it cost me $175. Big whoop. The fact is, it took me all of 3 minutes to set it up.
And they have a free trial if you want to play with it first.
And if you want to play with it first. And again, it took a little while to get everything up there the first time. I don't turn my machine off anyway, so it didn't matter to me. And my machine is fast enough that it happened in the background. I never noticed it. And my green light is fast enough that I never noticed it. And now it's just done. It's just done. And it's only one of my backups, but... it's the one I go to first because it is so convenient. It's just it's another drive on my desktop, only the drive itself is out in the cloud.
Yeah. No, it's just taking the time and effort, you know. So, all right, we got a couple questions in here. What's the difference between a tab and an app? I have both on my desktop, and I use Google Chrome. Also, what makes both of them popular? Thanks, Doug.
Well, app is just short for application, because we're computer people and we like abbreviations. And why is abbreviation such a long word?
Exactly. Yeah.
So apps are the programs that you run. Some people make a distinction between the program code and the application that you get from the program. All right. But then when you open a program, it usually opens a window. And especially with web browsers, a window is a web page. If you want to go to a different web page, you can open a new window and make a new page. But then you have two windows overlapping each other. Many of the browsers have a new tab option where you can open a new tab in the same window, kind of like folder tabs. So you see all the folders in your filing cabinet. Do people still have folders in filing cabinets anymore?
Yeah, right.
So each folder has its own tab. So you can go to different places and have different websites open all in one window with multiple tabs. And then the really sick people have multiple windows, each with multiple tabs.
Right. But okay, so yes. And the difference between an app and a...
app and a tab.
An app and a tab. So as Steve said, tabs on Chrome indicate that the program is running in the cloud. Theoretically, the app indicates it's running on your computer.
Yeah. But that's blurring.
Particularly unless it's a Chrome app.
A web app.
And it's a web app. And then it's just a window that shows up on your desktop, but it's actually coming from the cloud. The reality is that nobody wants to run local stuff anymore. They want everything running in the cloud. So more and more apps are web apps.
Yeah.
And so you're going to be – so, for example – right now, you can run in Chrome, for example. You can open up a tab and run Google Keep from the Google cloud. You know, keep.google.com, and it opens up Keep.
Yep.
You also have an app that runs on your desk that is Google Keep, and it is the same data because it comes from the cloud as well. Well, they're getting rid of the app in deference to a web app,
yeah,
which basically puts the window on your desktop, but the data are all still in the cloud, which is really what the app does anyway.
Right. It kind of started in the early days of smartphones, where the phones didn't have enough horsepower to run their own apps, so it was all web stuff.
Right.
But then the phones started getting more and more powerful, so they can run the apps directly. And now we're seeing kind of the opposite of that in computers, because so many things are web apps. Your computer doesn't necessarily need to be as powerful. So a relatively low-power Chromebook, which also means cheaper, can do everything you want because most of it is on the web anyway, where the processing is done at the other end.
Right. So when you run, for example, a word processing document or a spreadsheet in Google Docs, it's actually running at the other end and not in your computer at all. And what that tab is just a window into the program out on the web.
It's like a giant wire from your computer to theirs. And you're just seeing the screen.
It's like, I always tell folks, think of it as like the old dumb terminals.
Yep. Except that you can have local storage.
Yep.
So for one point, we had, as I was saying, I was writing a book, and I suddenly looked around, and I was in a cafe because I just wanted to be out of my house. And this is before COVID. And I looked around, and everybody was porked off because the Wi-Fi had gone out. Well, I didn't know that because my machine was working just fine. Not because I had some special thing, but because when Google Docs loses the connection to the web, it runs locally until it connects to the web again, and then it puts all that stuff back. So I closed my laptop. I went home. I opened it up. It synced to the web again, and I was all good. So the reality here for our texter is it doesn't matter anymore, and that's what makes it popular.
Well, that was another thing that I had. I was creating a couple slides for my ham group because I had to give a talk, and I created it in Google Presentation, and I saved it as a JPEG. And he goes, next time, could you do it in, Publisher or, PowerPoint? I go, tell you what, wait a couple minutes. I went back in, set him as PowerPoint, set him off. He goes, that was fast. I go, Google doesn't care.
Yeah, you should have told him, go to docs.google.com and share the file with him. And then you don't need any program.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. All right, we going to the phone?
Yep,
let's go. Our next caller is Ken from Rochester, New York. Hi, Ken, what's up?
Hi, guys. I'm glad you're all doing well. I was a little concerned and told my wife last week. I says, I hope the folks down there are A-okay. So it sounds like you're all in the peach.
Well, thank you, Ken. We are good. We are all good.
And I wanted to tell you that at least I feel blessed and grateful that you guys are willing to take our calls week in and week out. So kudos to you all.
Well, bless you, too,
Ken.
Thank
you very much. We appreciate that. Yeah.
You're welcome. You deserve it. I called 2.5 months ago or so and had a question that I thought potentially could be silly, and it turned out to be valid. I was looking to try and find files without an extension, you know, the .exe?
Yeah.
And as it turned out, I came across a software program that was free that I thought maybe somebody else could utilize as well as myself. And I've heard Steve make mention of this company before,
Nearsoft. A lot of really cool tools to do really cool stuff.
Yeah, there's a whole host of things that people might even be able to utilize beside this. The program is called Search My Files, so that works really well. And then I had two other questions for you quick. I don't want to hold you up too much. And I'm breaking out because, Nick, you guys talk about the Raspberry Pi, and so on. And of course, Nick with his the Linux. And finally, I broke out. So I tried the Linux, Mint.
Yeah.
All three versions, Cinnamon, KDE, Mate, and XFCE. I like the XFCE the best. But one of the things about it that I don't understand with a flash drive is that
it goes into a mode where you need a password to continue. It's like it times out, you know, like you're not using it for a while.
Right.
And I thought, whoever created this image, I wonder if they thought through this, because how would I know what the password is?
Well, it's in the documentation.
You said it, didn't you?
No, well, if you're using a live CD.
Oh, okay.
Then it just boots up.
Then it's not the password you set when you created the user.
Right, but there was a README file on that CD.
Yeah, I couldn't find it. I have it. Maybe I'm looking in the wrong place. I'll go back and research it. I have it. I mean, when I downloaded
right.
And these are old, by the way. They're 18.2. So I downloaded it years ago and just decided to kick off and try it. The other one I tried was Roku. That worked really well. And I tried the Raspberry Pi flavor.
There you go.
For a PC. So that worked out really well. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were if I wanted to build a system with multiple operating systems such as these.
Sure.
What would be a good choice for software to be able to go into one or the other when it boots?
Okay.
There isn't one.
There is one. Listen, we're going to stay on the line. Okay. We got to take a quick break. But when we come back, we'll answer this question. We are going to take a quick break. So everybody else, Ken's going to stay on the line, but everybody else is going to wait. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Ken from Rochester, and all of you on the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we, I think, still have Ken from Rochester on the line. Still there, Ken?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so here's the thing you can do. There's two ways to do this. First, you need a fairly hefty machine if you're going to run multiple operating systems simultaneously, because each one's going to need a certain amount of RAM and a certain number of processors and a certain amount of hard disk space. But assuming you've got all of that, or you're only going to run two at a time, say, here's the two ways to do it. First, you pick a host operating system. For example, I pick Linux. I then load a program like VirtualBox. Into VirtualBox, I create virtual machines with all the other things I want to run. Windows, versions of Linux, whatever. And then when I'm running, I can boot up virtual machine and then say, oh, I want to run my Windows instance. And it boots up and runs in its own window or on its own desktop, as it were. And I can do whatever I want in that, and it has no effect on my other machine, except that it's taken a couple of processors and it's taken some RAM and et cetera, some disk space. The other way you can do it is to run what's called a hypervisor. And that is you boot into the hypervisor, and all it lets you do is run other environments. So, for example, one popular one is Xen, X-E-N. And you load up Xen, and then you say, okay, I want to run XFCE, or I want to run Mate, or I want to run Cinnamon, and they'll run. So you can, they're basically the same idea. You run them in a virtual machine on the same box. So either one of those things works. I have to say that I've been using XFCE for decades, and I love it. Easy, fast, light, convenient, very nice. But either one of those will work. So if you've already got a machine running software that you like for a base operating system, you can then just load a virtual machine creator like VirtualBox. There are a dozen parallels is one on the Mac.
VirtualBox for the Mac, too.
And there's VirtualBox for the Mac. So there's a bunch of different ones that are available like that. And all you then need to do is to VM Player, VMware, VMware Fusion. There's just a bunch of them. And then you can then run other operating systems inside that. One nice thing about VirtualBox is it's completely free. And I think it is on Parallel. Is not free?
Parallels is not, no.
Okay. But VirtualBox is completely free on pretty much everything, Windows, Linux, and Mac. You never have to deal with upgrade to get more features or any of that nonsense because there's no paid version. It's completely free. It's a good place if you're gonna start playing with VMs. It's a good way to start playing with them.
Yeah, I think you guys are like, I'm using the Apollo ship, and you guys are recent. I was just thinking more the days of years gone by of just creating a few different partitions, loading each one individually.
You can do that. It's much easier to use separate hard drives.
Okay.
Because of the bootloaders.
Okay.
If you do that, then what you do is every time you boot up a machine, you go into the BIOS and pick one to be your boot drive.
Or just do it on multiple flash drives.
Or do it on multiple flash drives.
Well, flash drives are slower than hard drives.
Much.
Yeah, but if he wants to have one main one.
Or you could put an SD drive on USB 3.
Yeah.
That would be kind of fast. But yeah, either one of those ways will work.
Okay. I was just hoping there was a menu system where it could utilize each partition and have a choice.
Not easily.
You can select hard drives in the BIOS.
Right.
Say, boot up from this hard drive, CD-ROM drive, or USB port.
Honestly, the easiest is VirtualBox.
Yep.
Okay. Well, now I'm going to have to go back to school, but that's okay. I don't mind learning.
There you go.
There you go. Thanks.
Thank you, guys, all your help. One last thing I want to tell everybody real quick, because I've heard people say they have problems with like Linux and trying to figure out how to flash it. I follow the directions. There's a company called, I don't know if it's called Etcher. I think it is. Etcher.io.
Right.
It's two steps. You USB, bam, you're good to go. Just download whatever it is.
Yep.
All of those three I mentioned. And the other one that I love, which it times out, though, you got to buy it after a certain amount of time, is NCH Software Express Burn.
Yep.
Works really well.
So, wait a minute. Can you follow the direction? What the hell is wrong with you?
Nick.
we steered him wrong. Darn.
All right,
years
thanks,
ago,
Ken.
I was in the business, so that...
Yeah, it's exactly it.
I'm like you. I'm document crazy, so I do everything by the book.
Good for you. That's
There's
the only
one.
Way to be. That's the safest way to be. All right, thanks, Ken. We got to move on, but thanks.
You guys take care and stay well.
Keep smiling, will you?
Yep.
Yeah. The ability to burn a program with something like Etcher is very nice. It does mean that you can practice, you can play around, you can test things out. One of the things I like about my Raspberry Pi is that it really is a test device. It's a $100 test device. So I can... screw around with changing the operating system because they're just on micro SD cards anyway.
Yep.
So I can put whatever I want on it and make whatever I want to do happen, and it's all pretty cool. All right, our next caller is Jerry from Webster, New York. Hi there, what's up?
Hi, guys. Question. I'm looking to replace my HP laptop. It's been about 7-8 years old. I don't use it a whole lot, but I do use it some. I do have a desktop, but I was wondering... I've never used a Chromebook before. I just wondered what would be different from using a Chromebook versus a laptop. What can some things I would not be able to do with a Chromebook?
What do you do with the laptop now?
Just emails, internet. Once in a while, I pay some bills on it, not too often. And I do a little bit of financial work, but not very much.
Is it all web-based, or do you have programs that do the work?
Well, it's really kind of web-based, I guess, yes.
If they're web-based, then there's nothing you can't do on a Chromebook.
Right.
Okay.
If you have some specialized program that only runs, for example, on Windows, you can't run that on a Chromebook. But if, for example, you're using QuickBooks on the web, and that's just an example, but if it's a web-based financial program like QuickBooks, then you can do it all through your Chromebook.
And yeah. Many companies that used to make, you know, app only are now doing web apps.
Right. Yeah. So if you want to edit some photos, say, on your Chromebook, you can download an app just like you would on your phone, and it'll allow you to edit photos.
Or you can use PhotoPea on the web. PEA. PhotoPea. PhotoPea. And so in general, although you might use different programs, and it's a different, slightly different way of working if you are using different programs, there's very little you can do on a desktop that you can't also do on a Chromebook.
I see. So I would not be able to use like Windows Office or Word or Excel?
You don't need to.
But you have complete access to Google Docs, which includes a word processor, a spreadsheet, a PowerPoint-type program.
And if you want to pay for Microsoft Office, you can use the web versions of Microsoft Office.
Right.
But it's much easier to use the free programs from Google and other companies.
Yeah, like I was saying before, I wound up creating a presentation in the PowerPoint version of Google. Well, the person said, and then I saved it as a JPEG. And he goes, well, next time, could you do it in a PowerPoint? I go, well, wait a minute. And I just pulled it back up, and it allowed me to save it as a PowerPoint, set it off, and he didn't know the difference of where I created it.
Right. In addition, if you get a Chromebook with, say, 8 gig of RAM and a fairly decent processor like an i3 or something along that line, you can. They come with Linux now, and under Linux, you can run LibreOffice, which is a word processor, spreadsheet, database.
Completely compatible
with Microsoft products. Looks very much the same, works very much the same. So you have many more options. One of the nice things about a Chromebook is that it runs not only the web stuff that Microsoft, that Google has available, or that Microsoft, you could run iWork. And it's not called that anymore. Pages and those
Pages,
things.
Keynote, and Numbers, yeah.
Off the web as well. But you can also run Android apps, and you can run Linux programs. And in addition, shortly, you'll also be able to run Windows programs. They've announced that they're going to make that possible. So there will be dang near nothing you can't do on a Chromebook, assuming it's a big enough, hefty enough Chromebook. But if you want to save money and use a lower-end machine, then you will be using Google Docs, for example. And I've been writing stuff in Google Docs since it came out, and I've written 3 books in it. I've done spreadsheets that I sent to people as Excel spreadsheets. I've done
and nobody PowerPoint knows any different.
Nobody knows any different.
Yep.
In terms of all of that. If you're interested in a Chromebook, one of the things that you can do is on your current desktop, run Chrome, run the Chrome operating system.
Chrome browser.
Thank you.
Run the Chrome OS, but start with the Chrome browser.
Start with the Chrome browser. With the Chrome browser, if you log in with your Google Gmail address, right, you have your you have complete access to all the same stuff you get in a Chromebook. So from your browser, you can go to Google Drive and create documents and spreadsheets and presentations. You can share them with people. You can look at your email through the browser. You can do all of that stuff, and that will give you an almost exact idea of what it will be like to own a Chromebook.
Oh, no, he's going to have one other feature.
What?
He's not going to get viruses, spyware, malware, right, and have updates that mess up your machine.
Right.
Because you're not going to have to pay for that.
Yeah, that was my next question about that. So thanks for answering that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Right now, at least, There are no viruses for or that kind of stuff for a Chromebook. You can still do dumb things on a Chromebook. So there are toolbars you can download that bring all kinds of crap with them. You still have the ability to download those toolbars and add them to Chrome and screw up your machine. But you have to physically, actively do it.
There's been a huge surge in COVID-19-related malware and fake advertising and threats. Trend Micro just published a report for third quarter 2020, nearly 4 billion new email threats, specifically targeting COVID-19. 1 million malicious websites have been found and taken down. Fake stimulus check notices, you know, fake testing centers. It's horrible.
Yep.
And those are all coming as ads and emails. And so you can still get those on a Chromebook because it's just a web ad. It's not, but it can't affect your Chromebook because it's not a program.
Right. Well, that's happened here one day.
Yeah.
I was browsing for something to answer somebody's question. I got a big red box on my machine that said, "Your Windows is infected.
Call this phone number and pay us money and we'll clean you out."
Yeah. Right. And of course, I'm not running Windows, so I just laughed and moved on.
It was good entertainment that day.
It was kind of a fun thing.
Yeah.
But so at any rate, Jerry, the idea is if you use Chrome, you can simulate everything you'd want to do with a Chromebook.
And that's by using my Gmail address?
Use your Gmail address, and then you can go to docs.google.com. I think that's what it's...
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what it is, yeah. Docs.google.com, and you can create documents and spreadsheets and presentations and forms and all kinds of things. I use forms all the time, and people fill out the form, and then the answers show up in a spreadsheet. It's magic.
And if you just open up the browser, up in the upper right-hand corner, you're going to see it look like a tic-tac-toe thing with these, like, dots. Three dots by three dots.
You go to google.com.
And you click on that, and that'll show you all the other apps and stuff, like Google Maps and Google Docs and all these other things that are built into Google Chrome.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the information.
Yep.
There you go. Thanks.
All right. We do have one other question that came in just a little while ago. And it says, I know I'm supposed to keep my physical backup in a location other than in my house. Can I keep it in a shed that is very distant from the house where they get extremely cold in the winter?
Probably not if it's a hard drive.
So you would want to have a temperature-controlled case.
What I would suggest, and I was always taught this, is if you get one of those fire safes, put it in the basement.
Yeah.
Because a fire usually starts up at the top. It usually never starts in the basement. And if anything, if there's a fire in the house, where does the water fall? Down. So the chance of it getting extremely hot in a basement due to a fire is very rare.
He's less anyway,
And one of the things you have to watch out for is you want a data-ready fire safe or media-ready fire safe. Because a lot of fire safes are just designed for paper.
Right.
Which burns at 451 degrees.
Right.
But your hard
Fahrenheit.
Yeah, your hard drives and CDs and other media will melt long before then. So you need to have a data-ready fire safe. Because they survive higher temperatures, and they will often be rated for how many days submerged. Because if Dave mentioned, the water comes down, and once the fire is out, your safe is going to be underwater for a few days, and sometimes until you can get down to it. So you want to make sure you get a data rated fire safe. There's actually a company called IO Safe, and I'll post a link to that. They make hard drives that are already in a fire safe cabinet with a USB port.
Right.
And so it just looks like an oversized hard drive, but it's already a fire safe. And a lot of our businesses use that as their real-time backup because it is safer to leave plugged into the computer running. If there is a fire, the hard drive is safe inside the safe.
The other thing you have to remember is that with a physical hard drive, it's basically a disk of plastic with rust on it.
Yeah,
and if you still have access to a floppy disk, put it in the back of your car for a couple of weeks in the bitter cold, And when you pick it up, all the rust falls off it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just separates from the substrate. So putting a hard drive in a very cold environment, particularly in cold, hot environment, yeah, is a real problem.
We used to have problems in college. Just walking from the dorm, yes, to the computer center, the disk in your backpack would freeze.
Yeah.
Well, it would get cold enough that then when you stick it in the drive and it starts spinning at 1,000 RPM, it would just shatter. And,
yeah, that's exactly, yeah, right. So, yeah, no, the hard drives don't do well. Physical hard drives don't do well in cold. Neither really do SSD drives. They, yeah, are physical devices and are subject to the same sort of issues with cold, hot.
Yep. Doesn't do them
that
good.
That anything else is. So, honestly, I think the short answer to your question is no. I wouldn't keep it in the shed personally.
Nope. Sometimes people will carry them back and forth to work, so you have your work backup at home and your home backup at work. But you do have to be careful about some work security environments. They don't let you bring in stuff or take out stuff in some of the bigger companies.
Right. And in addition to that, you might, if you've got a very, very, very good friend, you can swap drives with them.
Yep.
You keep mine at your house.
CrashPlan used to have this cool option where you could back up for free. You could back up to someone else's hard drive that you knew.
Interesting.
Which they stopped doing that, which was annoying. So right now, a cloud backup is you're backing up your hard drive to someone you don't know.
Right. Right. That's why I've encrypted.
Yeah,
my PCloud backup
before it leaves your computer.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, but the idea, the actual idea here is that these devices are fragile. We don't think of them as fragile because we mostly keep them in a quiet environment.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't put it in the shed at all. I wouldn't do that even a little bit.
We sell a brand of hard drive from LaCie that they call them rugged, and it's got like an inch of hard rubber bumper around it.
Right.
So when you throw it in your backpack or briefcase and it bounces around inside your carry bag, it has a little more protection around it than just a regular hard drive.
Right. So unfortunately, I wish I could say you could do that, but certainly not in this climate. Whether it gets too cold or too hot. If it's not comfortable for people, it's not. If it's cold for you, it's cold for them. Bring them inside.
Yeah. You remember the CD holders you could get for your sun visor in the car? So you have your CDs in the car. That lasted about a day in the hot sun.
Yeah, exactly. I have a wallet of CD for my car, and I keep it under the seat.
Yeah.
Which is about the only place it's going to be any good. So yeah, they're much more delicate than you think. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to the several of you who called in far too late for us to get to you. There's just, you really can't call in the last couple of minutes. You need to call earlier. But I do thank everyone who did call in. And next week, call earlier, call often. But we're done for this week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You have spent the last 2 hours of your life listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would mean it was Sound Bites, right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that even in these parlous economic times, we continue to be solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to each other, will you?